Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 204, They Were Brothers. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Anakin Skywalker to my Obi-Wan Kenobi, because I've got the beard, we have Carl Eclair.
And I'm the one with anger issues. I'm just kidding. I am the chosen one. I'll take it. Yeah, I was actually thinking of that a lot, Jason. About kind of like how we are like brothers, and right. You are definitely more the Kenobi, and I'm definitely more the Anakin.
So it is kind of funny how that turns out.
Yeah, it's definitely an apt comparison.
It is, and I think it's the beard. The beard mellows me out.
Although I think your beard is a little it's probably just as red as Ewan McGregor's.
Yeah, I've got a red beard compared to my brownish hair, so it's odd.
Yeah, I get like weirdly like reddish facial hair too, even though I have like dark brown hair. But yeah, anyway, enough about our body descriptions and body hair.
Right. Anyway,
so Jason, I'm excited because it's another top five list. I love these.
Yeah.
Which for us is usually like a top seven list.
Yes, because we have two honorable mentions.
Right, but yeah, we're going to talk some of our favorite moments between Anakin and Obi-Wan. So, again, we've done a lot of top five lists around characters, but I think it was like a month ago, probably 2 months ago now, Jason, when we did our top five Han and Chewie moments. So mm-hmm. We're kind of going after some of those iconic Star Wars relationships and looking at some of our favorite moments. So that's what we'll be doing in this episode. But before we get to that, we had a really great poll that really garnered a huge response, which was awesome.
It did.
I think just indicative of the popularity of Rebels right now.
Yeah.
But the poll asked you guys which character from Rebels would you like to see in Rogue One. Now, granted, we all probably know that's not going to happen, but just for the heck of it, even if it was in the background, who from Rebels would you like to see in Rogue One? And we got a lot of responses, Jason, didn't we?
We did. And if somebody mentioned multiple people, I put a vote in for each of them. So here is what we got. And we got a ton more characters than I thought we were going to get. In seventh place, with one vote each, we got Vader, although that was more of a joke vote than anything. Ahsoka and Agent Kallus were all mentioned. In sixth place with two votes were Kanan and Ezra. In fifth place with three votes was Chopper. Fourth place with four votes, Captain Rex, which I thought was interesting. Third place was a two-way tie with five votes each. We had Zeb and Sabine. In second place, with six votes, including yours and mine, not actually a living, breathing character, but the Ghost. Yes, the Ghost got a second place here. And then finally, with 10 votes in first place, was Hera. So what do you think about all this?
I'm not surprised by that. I think, you know, I was tempted to say Kanan just because I love Kanan so much, but mm-hmm. I also know that like he won't fit into that story. And I think
not really well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important by the time we get to that period right before A New Hope that we don't have any sort of Jedi involvement at that point of the game. So whether Kanan is killed or goes into exile as well, or same thing with kind of Ezra, I think it's kind of that expectation that we know they wouldn't necessarily fit into the story very seamlessly, whereas somebody like Hera could. And I, you know, Jason, I was initially going to vote for Kanan just because I love him. But then I saw somebody, one of the first people to write the Ghost, and I'm like, oh my God, yes. Like, Right. And I think, you know, the Ghost to me is a character just as much so as the Falcon is, and you know, in the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely love the Ghost. I think it's such a cool ship. And
the great thing about what you could do with the Ghost is you could have it flying through one shot in that space battle that we see without being able to see inside or hear anybody inside. And it's like, yes, they are here, or at least some of them are here, but you don't give away anything about what's happening in Rebels.
Yeah, that would be really cool. You know, so yeah, I mean, I would, and that's the thing. It'd be a great background character, you know, just having mm-hmm. it docked, you know, in Yavin 4, or, you know, it shows up on Jeddah, or you just see it flying by Jeddah, you know.
Yeah.
I think it'd be so cool to have the Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to wait and see. It just makes, you know, I remember when the special editions came out in 97, and that was, you know, about 6 months after the Shadows of the Empire novel had come out. And obviously that was super big in the Star Wars community. So George Lucas threw the Outrider into the Mos Eisley shot, you know, as Luke and Obi-Wan are riding mm-hmm. the Landspeeder down down Main Street of Mos Eisley. Yeah. you see off in the distance, you know, what appears to be the Outrider. So technically mm-hmm. speaking, the Outrider is canon. Whether it's Dash Rendar as the pilot, we don't know, but
right. Well, that ship design is set to make an appearance in Rebels. We know that from the season 3 trailer. So
yeah, so it's the YTF 2400.
Yes.
So, but yeah. Anyway, awesome number of people responding to this, which was great.
Yeah. Indeed.
So yeah, thank you for the participation yet again, Larians.
Mm-hmm.
Jason.
Yes.
Let's talk about Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Yes.
And something Jason and I were just talking about before we even started recording, which I think is interesting, is that Anakin and Obi-Wan don't have a theme, which is just so intriguing. That the two of them, who are, in a sense, the central relational characters of the prequels, they don't have a theme. And I don't know. It just kind of blew my mind. I mean, I kind of always consciously knew it. But when I was just trying to pick out a song to like incorporate into the show, I'm like, wait a minute. They don't actually have a theme. I mean, obviously we have the Battle of the Heroes, but it's not their theme. It's just their fighting song, you know? So it just, you know, and we were just kind of talking about how the only people in the prequels that have themes are the, obviously, you know, Across the Stars, the love theme for Anakin and Padme, and then Anakin's theme. That's it. No other character has a theme in the prequels, which is just crazy.
Right. The droids, to an extent, have a theme. And then we see the resurrection of, obviously, the Emperor's theme, the Imperial March for the clones a little bit, that sort of thing. And, of course, the Force theme makes several appearances.
Right.
So does Yoda's.
I did forget. The Trade Federation has a theme in Phantom Menace.
Yes. Yes. But it's a lot of returning themes rather than new themes. The music that we get, something like Duel of the Fates, is more of a thematic item to set the stage for what's going on in the galaxy rather than a specific character theme. So, but yeah, it's not as many direct character themes in the prequels.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So, I would love somebody out there who's actually good at music, figure out a way to, because I, you know, the way John Williams seems to write themes for characters, because the only, you know, in the prequels we have the love theme for obviously, you know, Anakin Padme. In the original trilogy we have the love theme for Han and Leia, and then the brother and sister theme for Luke mm-hmm. and Leia. And the mm-hmm. Luke and Leia theme is obviously some, you know, again, if you listen to Star Wars Oxygen and the greatness that is David W. Collins, you'd hear him kind of explain, you know, that the Luke and Leia theme is kind of like this starting melody that lands somewhere between the notes of Luke's theme and Leia's theme, right? It's kind of a combination of those. And Across the Stars, I'm trying to remember which themes those are a combination of. But they're a combination of two themes as well, in a sense. I think it's based on the main theme. And Leia's theme. I could be wrong. Or Luke and Leia's theme, because it's somewhere in the middle. But anyway, these coupled themes are derivatives of solo themes or, you know, character themes. I would love to challenge anybody out there who is so musically inclined to basically take, you know, Obi-Wan's theme, which is the Force theme, at least according to A New Hope, and Anakin's theme, which is from Phantom Menace, and find the middle ground between those and write a theme based on that, because that would be their theme in the John Williams style.
Wow. That would be cool. And if anybody is that musically inclined to do that, please give us the final product.
Please
We'd
do
love
it.
To hear it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not even close to that musically intelligent, but I know that there's a lot of people who listen who probably are. So,
David W. Collins, if you're listening.
Exactly. Yeah, if he was listening, I'd be honored.
Right.
But, yeah, so anyway, just, you know, kind of interesting that they don't have a theme. And I wonder if to some degree that's on purpose or not. I don't know. But I do want to preface before we jump into our list, Jason, because I was talking to Jason earlier today and I said, man, my points all are like kind of confrontational and they're all like, I don't know, they're all like dialogue scenes. So I apologize in advance for those of you who hate my top five list when I find like the most boring things that I love. It's to me, I think, so kind of my early defense of my stance is going to the genius of George Lucas, that this story, this friendship, we know from episode one is doomed, right? Like we know where this relationship is going. So to me, that's kind of my defense of actually my favorite scenes between these two characters are the scenes that point to that kind of doomed nature of their friendship. And I think that's good storytelling. Again, I will counter that a little bit with like, I wish there were a few more specifically in the movies. Cause I know Jason, you're going to give us some good stuff from Clone Wars. Unfortunately, I only have one and it's confrontational. you know, I mean, obviously they do a great job of building that camaraderie just in general in the Clone Wars series. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, some of the critics would say, you know, well, you can't depend on a TV show to beef up your films, right? There should have been a few more things, I think, on screen in episode 2 and 3 that really kind of bolstered that camaraderie. I mean, it's there, but I wish it could be a little stronger. But again, in George's defense, he's writing a tragedy. And I think for me, the scenes that I kind of picked out indicate to you, you know, that this is obviously a good friendship, but we know where it's going.
Yeah, we do. And it's not anywhere good.
No. No.
Going to Mustafar in a handbasket. anyway, let's go ahead and jump into our list. And of course, as always on the Wampa's Lair, we don't start with number 5. We have honorable mentions.
Yeah. And I love, by the way, how whenever we've been doing some of these last few episodes of Tales of the Larians, where folks are like, you know, I have an honorable mention. It's like, oh, okay.
You know us too well.
Yeah. And we can't be hypocrites and call them out. So
No, because we do it all the time because we can't pick just 5.
So
do you want to go first or shall I?
You know what? I don't care.
I'll go first.
Yeah, Jason's going to go first.
Like normal. All right. So my first honorable mention here comes from Attack of the Clones. And this is right as the chase through Coruscant is winding down. Anakin is barging in towards the nightclub, and Obi-Wan stops him from running in without thinking. He hands him his lightsaber and gives him this ever so chiding statement that we assume Anakin has heard numerous times. This weapon is your life. and this little teaching moment, it's almost the last actual teaching moment we get between Obi-Wan and Anakin before, you know, we see that Anakin becomes a knight. Because for the rest of this movie, primarily, they are split up and don't have a lot of moments for teaching until we get to, you know, Clone Wars or Revenge of the Sith, and by that time Anakin's a knight. So it's one of those scenes where Obi-Wan stops Anakin to give him a little teaching moment. Remember, I told you this before. Here's your lightsaber. Keep an eye on it. This weapon is your life. And then, of course, he mutters as they go in, why do I get the feeling you're going to be the death of me? Which,
don't say that, Master. You're the closest thing I have to a father.
Yeah, about
then
that.
Then why don't you listen to me? I am trying.
I try. And then, anyway, but I just like that little interaction. Nothing special. It's kind of humorous, and if you're looking at it from Anakin's perspective, a little obnoxious at the same time. So I like it.
Yeah, Jason, I'm really glad you brought that one in, because that was almost on my list as well, because it's actually, I'm pretty sure, in the entire prequel trilogy, it's the only actual teaching scene between Anakin and Obi-Wan. Which again, too bad, you know, kind of, to me, one of the pitfalls of the prequels is not enough of those, you know, forced teaching moments. Again, kind of on purpose. But I love that scene, because Obi-Wan is, you know, for Anakin, he's the voice of calm, like, patience, mm-hmm. think, use the Force, and, you know,
right.
You know, and sorry, Master, you know, and that's like, Anakin's kind
try
of
not to lose it.
Yeah. Anakin's kind of the spaz, again, which is, I think this is going to happen probably a few more times this evening, Jason, where like, this is a good indication of our friendship. You know, I'm the one who kind of can tend to go off, on tangents and rage at things. Whereas you're like, patience, use the Force, think.
Let's bring it back down a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, I like that, because that's exactly what Obi-Wan kind of is to Anakin, is, mm-hmm. you know, he is that voice of calm. He is that teacher. And Anakin indeed is trying. I think it's really hard for Anakin. Mm-hmm. But he is trying, because, that scene shows just how much he, you know, he respects Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Which he kind of states later in Padme's apartment, you know, like, don't get me wrong, you know, Master Kenobi is as wise as Master Yoda and as powerful as Master Windu, you know.
It's a like, high compliment.
Yeah, Anakin really praises Obi-Wan. So that's a good scene to kind of show that, yeah.
It's a good pick. What's your first honorable mention?
Mine's also from Attack of the Clones, and I call it the balcony scene, kind of like that great one, Revenge of the Sith. Except this time it's between two different types of lovers. So there's that great scene where Anakin's out on the balcony, you know, and he's looking exhausted, and Obi-Wan says, "You look tired. I don't sleep well anymore."
Because of your mother.
I don't know why I keep dreaming about her.
Dreams pass in time. That's really insensitive, Obi-Wan.
Yeah, you know, and like, I'd much rather dream about Padme. Just being around her again is intoxicating.
Be mindful of your thoughts, Anakin. They betray you.
See, we don't need clips.
He's a politician.
Oh, come on, Master. Not a lecture, at least not about government and politics. I think this is... I've always liked this scene. Again, this is kind of a goofy reason why. My quote for senior year of high school... You know, I don't know if you could do this in your book, but a lot of times in yearbooks, right, you can have like your senior quote. Mm-hmm. My senior quote was, "Dreams pass in time, and all that's left is when you're awake." I thought I was like so poetic because I took a Star Wars line and then added my own ending. It's so stupid. But I lost like four friends that day. I've always liked that line, "Dreams pass in time." But actually, with further reflection, you know, it shows how disconnected Obi-Wan is from that sense of like having a parent, right? Like what Anakin is struggling with is something that Obi-Wan just can't understand. And that's why that comment is almost like insensitive. It's not intended to be, but he doesn't really have any practical advice because he doesn't know what that's like. So again, I think, you know, it highlights like why bringing Anakin in was just, he is a very unique Jedi. You know, he's so attached to these nightmares he's having about his mother. No other Padawan's going to have that experience. Certainly Obi-Wan never did. So again, it's kind of showing the flaw of that relationship between these two. Like Obi-Wan can only do so much because he's a very different experiential level. And conversely, though, it shows how much Anakin trusts Obi-Wan to say that stuff about Padme, right? Like, he just kind of, like, opens right up and says, you know, it's just being around her is intoxicating. It's
I don't know if he's doing that, you know, out of, you know, a feeling of wanting to open up or anything. I think he's, you know, in addition, you know, while he's telling the truth, yes, it's also to change the topic away from the pain that he feels about the foreboding he feels about his mother, and also get in a little dig at Obi-Wan because he knows how Obi-Wan's going to respond to this. I mean, he's like, I'd much rather dream about Padme. Just being around her is intoxicating, you know, like, and what are you going to do about it, master? You know?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's true. He is that kind of kid. But I don't know. To me, though, I think he is kind of opening that up because he wants advice with that, too. You know, I think those feelings that are coming up for him, he knows that he's a Jedi. He knows he's made a commitment, one not easily broken, yet he still chooses to bring that up. And I'm wondering if, again, he's looking to Obi-Wan to help him process that. And again, Obi-Wan doesn't let him. Although we're going to find out later on with one of my other points, and just from what we know about Obi-Wan does have some experience of this, but maybe at that point of their relationship, Obi-Wan doesn't want to share that. Because Anakin, correct, I think, is still too immature for if he was like, you know, well, I get that. I had these feelings once for a woman named Satine. He'd probably be like, oh, really? Well, then this is totally fine. Like, you know.
Right, exactly.
For Obi-Wan, I think, knows that if he opens that up right now, Anakin's going to use that as, like, justification.
Exactly. That's a can of worms that does not need to be opened up now.
Exactly.
Anakin's not mature enough for it.
Right. So, anyway. Boy, I said a lot about... Oh, man, I love balcony scenes. Oh, man.
All right. Well, why don't I move along second honorable mention?
It's probably not a bad idea.
We're going to take it away from a balcony and put it into a catacomb. yes, we're going to go down into a catacomb. This is from The Clone Wars Season 2 during the... issue with the brain worms that the Geonosians are dealing with. And Carl probably knows where I'm headed with this. but it's just a quick little moment. They are escaping the Geonosian queen. Obi-Wan is intrigued and curious about how these brain worms work. So he's used the Force to grab one. It's wriggling around and almost looking like it's about to get loose. So Anakin knocks it out of his hand and stomps on it, causing Obi-Wan to say, hey, what are you going to do? I was going to study that. And Anakin says, study the bottom of my boot. Let's go. And they dash off. And that sort of just encapsulates Anakin and Obi-Wan's post-master-apprentice relationship in two lines of dialogue. What are you going to do? What are you doing? I was going to study that. Study the bottom of my boot. Let's go. I love it. It was happened early on in the Clone Wars, but it's still one of my favorite dialogue interactions between those two characters from the show, period. So there's not much else to it, but I just really like it. So.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it somewhat hints at even your first point, Jason, again, just of the very different personalities. Anakin's in a rush, like, they're on a mission. Anakin's like, let's get the mission done. That's what he's focused on. Whereas Obi-Wan's saying, like, oh, I wonder what this is. I should take it back. And it's just, you know, again, kind of like those budding of personalities.
Right.
But yeah, it's so funny. Like, again, these are some of those scenes, though, that are just comical between those two. And
Yeah,
I'm very glad I have you as a co-host to bring those in.
it's the banter between Anakin and Obi-Wan in the Clone Wars was very good, and this is one of those examples.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
All right, how about your second honorable mention?
Well, mine comes. So now we're going to go from the catacombs, Jason, to the Bridge of the Invisible Hand. So I really like it's just that little moment. Right when Count Dooku shows up, they're about to, you know, when they're on their way to rescue the Chancellor, and Obi-Wan just turns to me and says, this time we'll do it together. I was about to say that, you know, I really like that. Like, they're on the same page now, you know, they know how to work together. And just the confidence they have in that moment, the confidence of like, we can handle this. I really like that because I think it just, again, without saying much of anything, just the way they hold themselves, the way they, you know, like derobe to just get ready to do combat. It's these are two guys who know how to fight together and they know they can do this. Right. And I just really like that because it shows what the Clone Wars did for these two men. You know, it brought them together. They are two peas in a pod and they know how to fight very well together. And that's exactly what they're about to do. So I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially throughout the Clone Wars, they've developed, and even before the Clone Wars, even in episode two, that when they fight together, they're almost unstoppable. Which is why when Anakin, you know, jumps the gun in Attack of the Clones, you know, Dooku disables that by, you know, taking it out one at a time. I do like it how they've learned through practice to, you know, we'll do this together. We're not going to make the same mistake again. And we're stronger for it. So, it's a great little moment to, you know, sort of peek into how they work together now before it all falls apart, you know, throughout the rest of the movie.
Right. So let's hop into the actual top fives, Jason.
There we go. All right. Mine is also going to be from Attack of the Clones. So we go from the Bridge of the Invisible Hand to the Geonosis Arena. And this is going to be another little bit of banter between Anakin and Obi-Wan. I think you know where I'm headed.
I know where you're headed.
Okay. So Obi-Wan's chained up in the middle of the arena. Anakin and Padme are being escorted in after just, you know, kissing. That was really silly. Sorry. And they roll up on Obi-Wan, who just sort of looks at them and says, "Well, I was beginning to wonder if you got my message."
We got it, and I retransmit it just as you requested, Master. Then we decided to come and rescue you.
Good job. It's so great. It's just like 2 seconds, but I love it. It's still one of my favorite interactions between Anakin and Obi-Wan in the films, period. You know, and then we decided to come and rescue you. He just glances up at his shackled hands, looks back at Anakin. Good job.
It's Obi-Wan has that classic British dry sense of humor.
Oh, yep. That dry wit. And it's wonderful. And I don't have anything else really to say about it, but it's funny. And I like funny. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm again, glad you're interjecting points like that. And again, like it's a funny moment. But you know, the sad thing is though, is like Obi-Wan's kind of tough on Anakin, like Anakin, you know, I think that this will probably keep coming up as well, but just the difference of their characters. If this had been role reversal, right? Like Anakin had been captured, Obi-Wan would have waited on the Jedi to respond and like the council to respond and what we were going to do next. Mm-hmm. You know, he has a far deeper level of detachment than Anakin. Whereas again, Anakin rushes in and Obi-Wan's just like, you're knucklehead. Like you didn't even think about this. So yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Of course that goes back to, Obi-Wan and Captain Typho's concerns when Anakin and Padme left, you know, where Obi-Wan goes, "I do hope he doesn't do anything foolish." And Typho goes, "Well, I'd be more worried about her doing something than him." And Padme enabled two of them to go to Geonosis. She's like, "Well,
yeah, well that's actually,
Mace Windu told you to protect me and I'm going to help Obi-Wan. So if you're going to protect me, you're going to have to come along."
Right. You know? And, you know, I just find that really funny, though, that he's like, you know, not going to go. That was one thing in that, like, that scene, like, to me didn't exactly work because it's like, that's not Anakin. Anakin wouldn't have listened to Mace Windu. Like, it's Obi-Wan. Maybe because that's just not where their relationship is there. But I just thought it was kind of weird that he needed that coaxing by Padme.
Oh, see, Anakin would have started off obeying Mace Windu. But then he would have gone stir crazy and it just would have gotten worse and worse until finally he was like, "I'm sorry, I have to go, you know, like what happened, you know, after he got that last nightmare about his mother. He'd been having nightmares for a while about his mother. And then, you know, it got to the point where on Naboo, he's like, I can't avoid this anymore. I've got to go. And so I think with this situation, Anakin would have started off trying to obey Mace Windu. And it just would have driven him stir crazy there, hanging around the ship with nothing to do. And Padme knows that. And so she's like, look, let's not just waste the time that we know we're going to go eventually. Might as well just do it now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So anyway.
All right.
That was not actually part of the point I was going to make originally, but it works.
Well, I'm gonna go for my number five, and we go from the arenas of Geonosis to the troop landing bays of Coruscant. So here's a little scene. I'm gonna play a short clip for it.
You're gonna need me on this one, Master.
Oh, I agree. However, it may turn out just to be a wild panther chase.
Master, I've disappointed you. I haven't been very appreciative of your training. I've been arrogant, and I apologize. I've just been so frustrated with the Council.
You are strong and wise, Anakin, and I am very proud of you. I have trained you since you were a small boy. I have taught you everything I know. And you have become a far greater Jedi than I could ever hope to be. But be patient, Anakin. It will not be long before the Council makes you a Jedi Master.
Obi-Wan, may the Force be with you.
Goodbye, old friend. May the Force be with you.
Aren't I so fun with my choices? Okay, so let me unpack why I enjoy this.
Okay.
It's the only moment we get between the two of them in on screen, really, where they're kind of affirming each other,
mm-hmm.
And really laying out what they respect in each other. And what's really important to me, and the reason I played the clip, is because I think it was important to hear it or hear what's not there, and that's music.
Yeah.
Right? Like, John Williams is very intentional with his use of music, obviously in any film, and especially Star Wars. I remember a while ago listening to one of the Star Wars Oxygen episodes where they were doing the music for the scene when, you know, Padme reveals that she's pregnant. And it's supposed to be like this happy moment, but the music is very foreboding, right? Like, John Williams is telling us that this is a sticky situation. And I just think it's really interesting that there's no music here at all. So it's good because of that, I think. That there is the kind of this like good moment between the two of them. They've been having kind of a rough go of things in the last few encounters here on Coruscant, but Anakin realizes Obi-Wan's being taken away, and maybe there is some small fear that he may not come back, but I think Anakin trusts Obi-Wan will be back. But he wants to, at least before saying goodbye, he wants to just be honest that, you know, like, he screwed up. And I like that about Anakin. And, you know, this is something that Obi-Wan clearly respects in Anakin. Anakin's able to say, like, you know what, I've been arrogant, and I haven't been appreciative of what you've given to me and what you've offered to me. And when he says that, this is really well acted by Ewan McGregor. He just kind of smiles a little bit when he says, I've been arrogant. There's like this little smile where, like, Obi-Wan's like, good, you recognize it, right? Without saying it to make him feel bad. But also what's kind of needed here for Anakin, again, Anakin's kind of reaching out to a friend here saying, you know, but I've just been so frustrated by the Council. And we know why, right? Like, Obi-Wan mm-hmm. has given him this difficult task from the Council. And Obi-Wan here, at least, knows how to respond to Anakin. He kind of just like he doesn't tell him what he wants to hear. He tells him what he needs to hear, you know. And for Obi-Wan's not just saying, oh, don't worry, like, eventually they'll make you a master. That's not cheap talk for Obi-Wan. He means it. Mm-hmm. And he's again, though, like, you know, your very first point, Jason, you know, be patient. It won't be long before they make you a Jedi Master, you know. So it's just like this moment where Obi-Wan is comforting Anakin, and I really like that. And it does bring it when he, you know, he praises Anakin. Anakin smiles. It's like the first time we see Anakin smile since the beginning of the film, you know, because he's been so tortured. You know, his soul is like being tortured right now. But Obi-Wan is able to still bring him a smile to his face. And then there's just that simple, you know, Anakin shouts to him, you know, Master, may the Force be with you. And, you know, goodbye, old friend. You know, it's just the way he delivers that line. Like, it says so much with so little. Like, it, to me, I would kind of equate it to like when Han Solo in Force Awakens says, yeah, I knew him. I knew Luke. Right? Like that, those simple little lines say so much. Obi-Wan saying, goodbye, old friend. Like, just that those simple words, like, tell us that these two are very close.
Yeah.
It's a really good scene. You know, one, obviously, it's the last friendly interaction that they're going to have before Anakin falls to the dark side. And so we need to have this type of moment. And so it's really nice to see Anakin be mature enough to come and apologize to Obi-Wan. And I think when Anakin, you know, does that apology and says, I'm arrogant, Obi-Wan smiles, not because, yeah, of course you've been arrogant, I'm glad you recognize it, but more, you know, pleased that he's mature enough to recognize and apologize for it. And they do have this, I suppose you could call it a tender scene, but it's a very friendly, very open scene between the two of them where there's no pretense, there's no real barriers. Between the two of them, they can finally just have this conversation where, you know, Anakin apologizes, Obi-Wan accepts it, Anakin expresses his frustration, Obi-Wan comforts him, and then they say goodbye. And I think Obi-Wan's point of saying goodbye, old friend, is, you know, obviously it's got that ring of foreboding for those of us who know how the story is going to go. But in the moment, it reaffirms the fact that, yes, even though we've had our differences and our, you know, confrontations here recently, particularly over Palpatine, that doesn't change the fact that we're friends. And I think that is such a very, I don't know if poignant's too strong a word, but a very important thing for Obi-Wan and Anakin to have before everything else falls apart.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. Because this is the last moment they're going to see each other before, you know, Mustafar, when Anakin has taken a step into the dark. So I think this is it's a very important scene. Also to remind us, the audience, of what's about to get lost, right? Like, this is a moment where these are two good friends who are super close, and the next time they see each other, they're screaming at each other and coming to blows.
Right. I guess it's my number four.
Is that your number four? Yes, sir.
All right. Well, we're going to go from the landing bay on Coruscant to the luxury Senate liner, the Coronet, during the Clone Wars. And this is from the episode Voyage of Temptation, where Obi-Wan and Anakin are escorting Duchess Satine to Coruscant. And this is the episode where Obi-Wan reveals his relationship with Satine to Anakin. And I'm wondering how close on your list this might be, if it's on your list.
It's actually not, and I'm really glad it's on yours.
Okay.
Because I couldn't remember where this was.
Okay. I hurriedly was looking through the episodes on Netflix going, which particular episode was this in again? But yes. Thank God for Clone Wars on Netflix.
I know. Oh my gosh. I hope they put Rebels on it too.
Hopefully. Sooner rather than later would be nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, and this is where Obi-Wan reveals how much of what Anakin is going through with Padme, he actually understands. Now, obviously not quite to the degree, because Anakin is technically married now by this point. But Obi-Wan understands the feelings that he perceives Anakin sees in Padme. And so when he talks to Anakin about these relationships, he actually is talking from experience, which amazes Anakin. You know, the fact that Obi-Wan actually did something that's not quite according to the code. What? Scandalous, almost, you know, in sort of a, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge sort of way. But Anakin finds this aspect of Obi-Wan's past fascinating. And Obi-Wan goes, yes, you know, it would, and it would have been a much more serious thing. And at the end of the episode, in order to save Satine, Obi-Wan is forced by the evil Mandalorian senator guy to, you know, have that final goodbye. And Obi-Wan says, you know, Satine, if you had asked, I would have left the Jedi Order for you. And Anakin's there at the time. And so Anakin knows the extent that Obi-Wan cares for Satine and still cares for Satine. And I think that helps their relationship immensely going forward. So
I'm so glad you brought that up, because actually was going to one of the points I was going to put on here, Jason, was right after that, right when oh my gosh, what's the name of that guy that captures her there?
I'm blanking on his name.
Call him Jim Bob.
Jim Bob, yeah.
Most un-Star Wars.
And I just had the dang page up on Wikipedia and I closed it.
Hold on. Well, for right now, we'll just put as a placeholder Jim Bob.
I'm pulling it back up here.
Okay. So anyway, though, I like when he's, you know, he says to her, like, you won't pull the trigger because if you do, you're a hypocrite. That's not a pacifist thing. And then he says to Obi-Wan, you know, if you kill me, you know, everybody will praise you as a hero, except someone. Like, to me, that's how he should have said it. Like, and then, you know, who's going to do it? Who will commit the cold-blooded murder? And then Anakin does.
Right.
Which, like, and he's like, what? He was going to blow the ship up. Like, like, yeah. I thought it was a hilarious moment, but I think that's more of just an Anakin moment than an Anakin Obi-Wan moment.
It is.
And obviously awesome by Kevin Kiner there to use the Imperial theme right after he does it. Like, yeah, that's something Anakin would do, which is terrifying, right? Like, he doesn't, you know, in his mind, it's like, this is a bad guy. I'm just going to kill him. But it is in cold blood.
Yeah. Found his name. Senator Tal Merrick.
That's right. Senator Merrick. But yeah, that's such a great episode because of that. And I love how, you know, when they split up, when the attack starts, and Anakin goes, you know, I'll deal with the droids. You go save your girlfriend. Anakin, she's right. Not, you know.
Right. Anakin, she's not my. Oh. At first, it doesn't connect with Obi-Wan. It's really funny.
Right.
Right. And then Anakin's halfway down the hall before he realizes what he just said. And Obi-Wan's like, but Anakin, she's not my. Oh.
Yeah, that's such a good one. I'm going to pretend that's on my list, too. Because okay. I love it. You know, that is such a great part, because you're right. It's so foundational for really moving their relationship forward, because Obi-Wan's well aware that he's got something, you know, he's got feelings for Padme. And now Anakin knows that he's not alone in this, that Obi-Wan has had those feelings as well. So I think that's so huge. And again, I love the cracks he continually makes to him through the episode, but it's, to me, like, the perfect one is when he's like, I'll go deal with the droids. You go save your girlfriend.
Right.
It's just so funny.
It is.
And again, it's like, to me, Anakin is just, he's got such a flippant personality, which I appreciate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it's so funny. So that's an awesome one, Jason. It actually works very well for my number four to feed into it.
Okay.
So now we go from the
coronet.
The coronet back to the living quarters of the Jedi Temple on Coruscant.
Oh,
and this is from the Lost Missions or whatever. So I just call it season 6, episode 6, Rise of Clovis in the Clone Wars. And it's when Obi-Wan shows up at Anakin's bedroom, essentially, and kind of confronts him about his anger towards Clovis.
Yeah.
And what that's really means and where that's really coming from. And again, this was a clip we saw at, was this at Celebration 6? Yeah, exactly.
Because that story arc was originally supposed to be in season 5. Then they decided to move it.
That's right. So for starters, obviously, I loved getting to watch that with you and Steve Glosson. That was a good time. But and I also really like it too because it's so cool seeing Anakin's living quarters. Right? Like how starkly different are they from Yoda's? It's not that right. He has like a lot of stuff, not by any means, but he's really personalized it, right? He's got that pod racing poster up. And he's got, you know, he's got his workbench because he still like loves fiddling with droids and mechanical stuff. And I like that because I can almost guarantee that Anakin has the most flippantly decorated quarters in the temple.
Yeah.
And again, a little self-serving here, but it just reminds me when I did a program in between my 2 years of graduate school where I was thinking about becoming a Jesuit priest. So I lived in a Jesuit community in Chicago for the summer. And I was living in a Jesuit house, but my bedroom I decided to personalize. It was the summer that Michael Jackson died, and I'm a huge Michael Jackson fan. So I cut out this huge poster of him from the daily newspaper and hung it under like a, you know, like a framed picture of Mary and Jesus, like in my bedroom. And I ended up like putting like a few like little Star Wars pictures up around the bedroom, and they're like, Carl, you realize you're only here for a few like 6 weeks, right? And I was like, whatever, it's my room. But anyway, so I really like that. Like, I get why Anakin personalizes it. But anyway, to the story point, again, this is where Obi-Wan says to him, you know, Anakin, like he's towing that line because Obi-Wan doesn't want to. I don't think Obi-Wan really wants to know the extent of their relationship. He knows they have one. He knows that they probably shouldn't, that it's in some ways inappropriate. I don't know that he thinks they're married.
Not yet.
And I don't think he wants to know at this point still. But I like at least here he's making it personal. So again, like my very first point about, you know, them on the balcony and he's kind of talking about these tortured dreams of his mother. It's something Obi-Wan can't relate to. Obi-Wan relates to him here, right? He says, I get it. Like you know, like I once had feelings for Duchess Satine. And I like where he says, you know, it's not that we're not allowed to have these feelings. It's just important that we don't like act on them is basically what he's saying. And again, that just rings true to me as somebody who thought about being a priest for so many years. That was always questions I used to ask like mentor priest friends. I'd be like, how the hell do you do celibacy? They would always be like, it's not that we don't have feelings for other people. It's just, you know, we choose to do something different with them. And I love that point with Obi-Wan because, again, he's at least recognizing that Jedi, yes, like they aren't completely stoic. Like they're still human. They have, they have emotional attachments. It's just what they choose to do with them. And Obi-Wan, I think here is he's really trying to caution his friend, you know, and Anakin is so defensive, like when he slams his, you know, his model down and he says, we're just friends. Obi-Wan knows that friends don't get that upset, you know,
right.
Over something like Anakin is jealous like a lover. He's not jealous like a friend.
Exactly.
And Obi-Wan, I think here is he's trying to say like just be mindful of what these feelings will do for you. You know,
don't do anything stupid.
Exactly. And I was just kind of actually working through rereading the Revenge of the Sith novel because it's one of my favorite books of all time. And there's some great stuff in there. There's a scene in the novel, again, that's not in the movie, when Obi-Wan goes to visit Padme. And he basically says to her, like, you know, I know that there's something going on with you and Anakin. I don't want to know what it is. But he's like, it's just important that he doesn't leave the order. It gives his life structure. And I think this is in this particular scene in the Clone Wars, Obi-Wan is kind of trying to say that to Anakin, like, you know, you wouldn't do well if you left the order. Like, we provide a family for you that you can't have outside of here. But I don't think, and again, that's what makes me think Obi-Wan is a little bit in the dark still about, like, that Anakin, in a sense, does have a family. Like, he has a wife, and you know, a year's time, he's going to have a child.
Right.
So, you know, it's just this really great scene where Obi-Wan is doing his best to be a good friend to Anakin by letting him like relate to him, saying like, I get it. I've been there. But Anakin is just so darn defensive. And I like the way the scene ends where the whole time Anakin is defensive and kind of aggressive. And as Obi-Wan walks out, again, if you're watching this scene, because this is a visual thing, it's really important to pay attention to Anakin's expression. He kind of like raises his hand and his face kind of drops into this frown where like he almost, it's like he wants to apologize for the way he's acting, but Obi-Wan's already gone. So again, it's like Anakin's capable of knowing when he's kind of gone too far. Mm-hmm. But again, it's like Obi-Wan's gone.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a great scene, and I'm glad you remembered this one, because that was one that I had didn't quite remember from my list. So that's such a good scene, though, because Anakin, you know, just like after he came back from the Tusken camp in episode 2, and he's in the garage fixing things, you know, because that helps his mind put things back in order. It's what he's doing in his room. He's in there messing with stuff and fixing things because he's stressed out. And Obi-Wan, at this point, Obi-Wan doesn't know the extent of Anakin and Padme's relationship, only because he doesn't want to know. All the signs are there. If he wanted to know, he would have been easily able to find out, I think. You know, it's he didn't want to know because he didn't want to have to turn Anakin in, basically, I think is the extent there. But I do love that scene, and I love the fact that Obi-Wan is trying to reach Anakin with this, you know, common theme between the two of them.
Yeah.
And Anakin is just so in this jealous rage, essentially, that he's refusing to take the counsel the way Obi-Wan is meaning it. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so such a good scene.
I agree.
All right. I'm going to stick around in the Clone Wars, and we are going to go from the Jedi Temple on Coruscant to the streets of Naboo.
I love our galactic tour in this episode.
Yes, we're doing quite a tour de force here. And this is from the storyline where Obi-Wan goes undercover as a bounty hunter, Rako Hardeen, and he has to trick Anakin into believing he's dead in order to fool Dooku and the Separatists so he can pull off this undercover operation without anyone suspecting who he is. And at the end of the fourth episode of this arc, they finally meet back up again, and Obi-Wan is able to talk to Anakin and say, look, you know, I'm sorry I had to do this, but it was for the good of the mission. And Anakin is hurt. He feels so betrayed, you know, by, you know, Obi-Wan, yes, but the Council in particular for keeping him in the dark on this mission, because the Council knew everything that was going on. And the, you know, in addition to being angry at Obi-Wan in person, you know, he's also extending that to the Council, and he says, you know, can we even trust the Council? Do we even know everything that they're doing? Do they even know everything that's going on? And he expresses his frustration and kind of stalks off, leaving Obi-Wan to contemplate everything that's happened. And, you know, it's just such a point of how much Anakin cares about Obi-Wan that the idea of them keeping him in the dark on, you know, Obi-Wan actually being alive. They had a funeral for him and all that fun stuff. You know, essentially Anakin buried Obi-Wan. And then to find out it was just part of an undercover mission. I'm actually still alive. You know, Anakin feels like he's not, you know, that they don't trust him to keep the illusion alive. And it hurts him. It hurts him a lot.
Which he says, you know, even in Revenge of the Sith, Obi-Wan and the Council don't trust me. Mm-hmm. You know, he says that to Padme. So
exactly. So, you know, it's it's nice to see, you know, some of those instances from the films being played up a little bit in the Clone Wars. And, you know, so it's not just a one-time thing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But it's, you know, there's not really quite a resolution there, although they do make their peace by the end of the episode. It's just, you know, a very defining moment there in the series. So,
yeah, I'm really glad you brought that in too, Jason, because that's such a, you know, I mean, obviously Obi-Wan's feigned death really hits Anakin. Because and that was kind of the point, right? Like, for Yoda and Mace Windu, you know, it's like, well, we've got it. If Anakin believes it, the galaxy will believe it. And that's why they keep him in the dark. And again, they think they're doing something for the greater good. But for Anakin, you know, it's, I'm taking this right out of the Revenge of the Sith novel. When Obi-Wan says this line to Mace Windu, he says, "Anakin is loyal to people, not to abstract ideals."
Mm-hmm.
And this, like, this is a perfect point of that. Where Anakin is just, at first, like, he's heartbroken. He thinks his best friend is dead. And then to find out, nope, he's alive and you actually fought him. And, you know, like, there's, you know, this is just a big, this is something that's being kept from you. Thank you, keeping. Come on. Jeez. This is something that's been kept from him. And like you said, Jason, it hurts. And I love when he puts his finger in Obi-Wan's face and says, "How do you know that? You know, that they're even telling you the truth," something along those lines, right? Like, and, you know,
right.
How do you know the council's even, you know, being completely honest with you?
Right.
You know, Anakin is just like, he's furious with the council and he's furious that his friend would do this to him. You know, I mean, that's like a punch right in the gut to Anakin.
Yeah.
So, and the thing is, it hurts Obi-Wan too. Like, it really hurts Obi-Wan.
Yeah. The fact that, you know, something he did caused that kind of pain to Anakin really does wound Obi-Wan. And, you know, he can't express it the way Anakin does because of the way his personality and that sort of thing. But you can tell it hurts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna hop us over to my number three then.
Okey-doke.
So we're going to go from the street to Theed all the way back to the hallways of the Jedi Temple.
Okay.
And I've got a nice little clip for us yet again, Jason.
Oh, whoop-de-doo.
What kind of nonsense is this? Put me on the council and not make me a master? It's never been done in the history of the Jedi. It's insulting.
Oh, calm down, Anakin. You have been given a great honor. To be on the council at your age, it's never happened before. The fact of the matter is, you are too close to the Chancellor. The Council doesn't like it when he interferes in Jedi affairs.
I swear to you, I didn't ask to be put on the Council.
But it's what you wanted. Your friendship with Chancellor Palpatine seems to have paid off.
There's nothing to do with this.
The only reason the Council has approved your appointment is because the Chancellor trusts you.
And?
Anakin, I am on your side. I didn't want to put you in this situation.
What situation?
The Council wants you to report on all the Chancellor's dealings. They want to know what he's up to.
They want me to spy on the Chancellor? That's treason.
We are at war, Anakin.
Why didn't the Council give me this assignment when we were in session?
This assignment is not to be on record.
The Chancellor is not a bad man, Obi-Wan. He befriended me. He's watched out for me ever since I arrived here.
That is why you must help us. Anakin, our allegiance is to the Senate, not to its leader, who has managed to stay in office long after his term has expired.
The Senate demanded that he stay longer.
Yes, but use your feelings, Anakin. Something is out of place.
You're asking me to do something against the Jedi Code. Against the Republic. Against a mentor and a friend. That's what's out of place here. Why are you asking this of me?
The Council is asking you.
Oh, yeah. I've titled this clip Spying Assignments. I, again, highlight of that clip for me is the music. I love like that string piece that I can't even sing it. What am I trying to do here?
It's similar to the music that we get when Obi-Wan is on Kamino in Attack of the Clones, actually.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. There's something mysterious about it. Again, this is such a great scene because we're getting closer to the breakup of this friendship, and here's evidence as to why. And this kind of, again, Jason, connects to the point, you know, your last moment as well is, you know, in that last, the thing you were just talking about when he goes undercover as Rako Hardeen, Anakin really loses a tremendous amount of trust in the council. And now it's basically gone. And worse, he's attaching some of that loss of trust to Obi-Wan. He's also losing some trust in Obi-Wan. I think in Anakin's eyes, his best friend has become a lackey of a group of people he doesn't trust.
Yeah.
And it's such a strained part, you know, moment here because Obi-Wan too, he doesn't want to do this. You know, Anakin, I'm on your side. I didn't want to put you in this situation, you know? If this is again, hurting Obi-Wan. But the difference between them is characters, right? Like, Obi-Wan is loyal to ideals and then people as well. Whereas Anakin is loyal to people. Ideals, if convenient, you know?
Right.
But it's just so important, again, that this scene, it's like a crumbling relationship is what's going on here. Anakin, like he's so frustrated, you know, in his mind, he's just been slapped in the face. And Obi-Wan immediately tries to take that shame away of like, hey, look, you're young. Nobody's ever been this young on the council. But here's the problem. Like you're too close to the chancellor. And Obi-Wan points out, I think, an inconvenient truth to Anakin, you know, like your friendship has paid off. And Anakin's saying, like, you know, I didn't ask for this. And Obi-Wan, I'm sure Obi-Wan believes that, but he's just saying, look at though, your friendship has gotten you some benefits. And that makes the council wary of you and your relationship to him. And Obi-Wan is clearly wary of Palpatine, which I think bothers Anakin because Anakin's just not at this point, you know, and he defends him there. You know, he's befriended me. He's looked out for me ever since I arrived here, you know? You know, for Anakin, this is just like asking him to stab a friend in the back. Like, that is so who not Anakin is. And he's being asked by Obi-Wan. And I love when he says, you know, why are you asking this of me? And Obi-Wan won't even look at him. He says, the council is asking you.
Right.
Because Obi-Wan is ashamed of having to do this.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's... I'm glad you put this on your list because I didn't have it on mine. And it's such an important scene leading into, you know, the rest of the events of Revenge of the Sith. And obviously, we have that nice, you know, apology scene later on, but this doesn't go away. Even though they're apologizing and they're mending bridges between the two of them before Obi-Wan leaves for Utapau, this doesn't go away.
Yep.
Because Anakin still has to spy on the Chancellor. Who is like a father figure to him. Palpatine has positioned himself to be a very kindly father figure type person for Anakin, and who also appears to be looking out for Anakin's well-being in getting him some of these advancements throughout his, you know, Jedi career. So why wouldn't he want to trust Palpatine? Unfortunately, it's because Palpatine's smart. this scene is, you're right, with the Rako Hardeen instance, Anakin's faith in the council is severely shaken. And by this time, his trust in the council is practically obliterated because of what they have Obi-Wan do. And Obi-Wan doesn't want to do this. He says, you know, I'm on your side. I didn't want to have to do this to you. And, but one is loyal. He's loyal to the Jedi Order. He's loyal to the Jedi Council. And he's also loyal to Anakin because if anybody else had given this assignment to Anakin, who knows how it would have gone down.
Right. Anakin would have just like
it would have been worse.
Yeah.
So Obi-Wan is doing this because basically what happens is the best possible reaction an Anakin could have. You know, if Mace Windu had given Anakin this mission, heads would have rolled. Anakin would have fallen to the dark side and Palpatine wouldn't have had to do anything. You know? Maybe I'm slightly exaggerating there, but I think the really big point as to, you know, not only is this, you know, trust shattering for Anakin when it comes to the Jedi and the Council in particular, it hurts so much for Obi-Wan, just like the one I talked about, because that last question that Anakin asks, why are you asking this of me? And Obi-Wan doesn't have an answer other than the Council is asking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and there's, again, a great scene in the novel. It's in the movie, but there's a lot of dialogue not included in the movie. In the novel, when Obi-Wan is kind of debriefing with Mace and Yoda afterwards, he says, you know, I fear that I've done a horrible thing. And Yoda kind of is honest with Obi-Wan. He says, you know, you have a lot of strong feelings for Anakin. You're very attached to him. And Obi-Wan says, yeah, I am. Basically, I mean, I'm not obviously giving verbatim here, but mm-hmm. Obi-Wan admits to Yoda and Mace that, like, you know, he does have a strong attachment to Anakin. And the scene ends with him saying, like, I don't know that Anakin will ever fully trust the Council again or me. And then he goes, I don't even know if he should. And that's how the scene ends in the novel, which is huge, right? Like,
yeah.
Obi-Wan really gets what this has now done.
Right.
And, you know, again, it sucks. Poor Obi-Wan. Like,
yeah,
it just stinks for him. So,
yeah.
Jason, where are we going next on our galactic tour?
Well, we're going to have one more little breath of fresh air here on our trek, because we're going from the hallways of the Jedi Temple on Coruscant to a nice little Ewok picnic on the forest of Endor. And I'm picking the moment of the fact that Anakin and Obi-Wan are Force ghosts together at the end. You know, there has been not only a reconciliation of Anakin with the light side, but there's been a reconciliation through the Force of this friendship between Anakin and Obi-Wan. And, you know, they share a smile together as they, you know, proudly watch Luke complete, you know, the task there and win this decisive victory against the Galactic Empire and against the Sith. And, you know, there's not much to the scene, but I really like it because there is that reconciliation ultimately between Obi-Wan and Anakin. You know, I'm sure we're going to talk about, you know, the scene where the friendship is completely torn apart, but ultimately they are reconciled and they come back together as friends. You know, alibi is Force ghosts, but you know, they can haunt people together. So
that's a really interesting one, Jason. I would never even have thought of that, but I'm glad you did.
I like my happy endings. So
yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly what that is. And, you know, I don't know how happy they are to be together because Yoda is in between them as a buffer. No kidding. But
they're keeping Obi-Wan from they're keeping Yoda from falling off that railing there.
Yeah. Well, so. And I will say this, though. I think that scene works better for the saga story in light of the prequels. Whereas, you know, in the original trilogy, when you saw Return of the Jedi, you saw that ending, you just saw these three Force ghosts. That was all about Luke. It was about Luke's experience of that. But mm-hmm. now in light of the prequels, we can say, like, finally that prophecy has certainly come true. And we've seen kind of the reunion of these two friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took Luke to bring them back together. That's really cool. I like that you threw that in there.
Yeah. I needed a little bit of a happy breather here before we get, I'm sure, dark.
So, well,
what's your number two?
It's not dark. It's not that dark, at least. But yeah, right. So let's get on our ship, and we're leaving the cozy Ewok village now for the battlefields of Geonosis.
Ooh.
And again, I'm gonna play this because it has a lot of great dramatic effect to hear.
Okay.
Put the ship down, Anakin. Don't let your personal feelings get in the way. Follow that speeder. Over the ship. I can't take Dooku alone. I need you. If we catch him, we can end this war right now. We have a job to do.
I don't care. Put the ship down.
You will be expelled from the Jedi Order.
I can't leave her.
Come to your senses. What do you think Padme would do if she in your position?
She would do her duty.
Yeah, she would. She's not a brat. I've always liked this scene. This has always been one of my favorite scenes in Attack of the Clones.
It's a good scene.
And again, it's similar to a lot of what we've been talking about this whole episode, Jason, but again, the difference between Anakin and Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan is looking at the big picture here. Like, we need to move forward and we need to take out Dooku. That's the big picture here. Whereas Anakin's thinking, oh my gosh, the woman I'm in love with could be dead, or, you know, is badly wounded. Like, his thought is for a person, Obi-Wan's is for an ideal. And we get that conflict there. And the reason the scene, I think, works so well and why I like it so much is the two of them argue well together, I think. Mm-hmm. They have a nice arguing camaraderie. and, you know, it's what I guess just what I like about it is Obi-Wan knows how to appeal to Anakin here. You know,
yeah,
because it's interesting that Obi-Wan does get him, because at first he's again trying to appeal to the bigger picture of like, look, we have a job to do. If we get Dooku, we can end this war right now.
Yeah.
And then Anakin says, I don't care. Put the ship down. And then he goes with, you'll be expelled from the Jedi Order. Like, again, he knows what Anakin's after here. And I can't leave her. And then Obi-Wan says, what do you think she would do if she was in your position?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like where Anakin's like, yep, you know, she wouldn't be too pleased if I turned around right now and am, you know, responsible for Dooku escaping in a war.
Right.
You know, so Obi-Wan kind of just has to keep chiseling away at it there. And, you know, it goes from big picture to small picture of like, you know, the galaxy at large to his place in the Jedi to finally the thing that Anakin cares most about. What do you think Padme would think of you? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it just shows that Obi-Wan knows how to talk to Anakin, and he kind of knows how to talk Anakin down, which I don't know that other Jedi masters could train Anakin. You know, I think the only person that could have trained Anakin effectively was Qui-Gon.
Right.
And that's not a knock on Obi-Wan. But Obi-Wan is still so attached to the council and the, you know, kind of the doctrine of the Jedi. But he's at least has enough of a personality that he is mostly successful at training Anakin. I think the only other person that could have done it was Qui-Gon.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's just that scene there shows that Obi-Wan knows he knows Anakin. He knows how to talk to Anakin. So I like it that now. So just again, I just always really liked that scene.
Yeah, no, it's a really good one because in addition to, you know, the fact that this is why I think Obi-Wan didn't want to know the extent of Anakin and Padme's relationship, because he knows exactly what to say to get Anakin to focus properly. And this is very early on in their more adult relationship, Anakin and Padme's relationship. And you're right. He takes it from the big picture to the smaller picture to this particular instance of what is going to get through to Anakin. He knows exactly what to say. He knows exactly how to put it in order to get Anakin to respond correctly. and to focus. And there's no way, if Obi-Wan was looking, would he not have known that they were married? Yeah. You know, so especially after a scene like this. And it shows, it just goes to show how much Obi-Wan knows Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
He knows him through and through. It's just Anakin doesn't like to admit the fact that Obi-Wan can see right through him.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's a good scene.
I think so too. So shall we go to number one?
I suppose so. Do you have a clip for this one?
I don't, I mean, I do. I don't know what you have.
you really don't know what I, this tragic moment here?
Okay. I guess I do.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to share the same number one yet again, folks. Go for it.
Okay.
It's over, Anakin! I have the high ground!
You underestimate my power!
Don't try it! Chosen one! It was said that you would destroy the Sith, not join them! Bring balance to the Force, not leave it in darkness! My brother, Anakin! I loved you!
And that wraps up this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast. Oh, man. I really don't feel like much else needs to be said, though.
I mean, this is, again, one of those scenes we've talked to death on this show.
Right.
With good reason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all I'm going to bring to it, and nothing, I don't really have anything too new to offer to it, but at least in the context of the show, this scene is the death of the friendship.
Right.
And something, you know, I used to kind of debate with myself about, you know, is this an Anakin Obi-Wan movement, or, you know, he's Darth Vader now. I don't know that he's ever fully Darth Vader in this movie. And that's a point we can get to probably on some other show, because, you know, it might be a long discussion, but just the cliff notes of why I don't think that Anakin does. He kind of falls from grace here, but he's again just kind of doing it for Padme. He's not pure evil at that point. You know, he's making some stupid choices, but he's not horrible yet. Mm-hmm. And I always thought it was interesting, you know, again, the novel that comes out after Revenge of the Sith called, you know, Dark Lord, Rise of Darth Vader by James Luceno. I love that it's called The Rise of Darth Vader, because that's really, you know, once he gets the mask, I think that's when he's encased in that armor, that's when he loses Anakin completely, right? He loses his humanity by literally being entombed. So I do still think that this isn't an Anakin Obi-Wan moment, and it's the literal death of their friendship.
Right.
And again, like, that was kind of the point I made at the top of the show was, you know, I think in the films, yes, one thing that is a bit lacking is some of those strong scenes of camaraderie. I mean, they're there, but I don't think there's a ton. Clone Wars, there's plenty in Clone Wars. But in the films, again, George is, I think, intentional with that. You know, he is showing us that this is a tragic friendship. And this is that perfect scene where we see that friendship fall apart. And I will say this, for all of those people out there who thought that, you know, these two characters' camaraderie or their relationship sucked in the prequels, I challenge any of them to not pretend like they didn't like feel something during that scene, because you do.
Right.
You know, and whether or not that was well portrayed in episodes 2 and 3, you know, their friendship, you see here the death of a friendship by the way what they say to each other. Anakin's, I hate you. I mean, it's his rejection now of everything Obi-Wan meant to him, whereas all Obi-Wan can say is, I loved you. And also, Obi-Wan had put so much hope into Anakin. But it wasn't just a hope in, like, this Jedi prophecy. Obi-Wan believed in his friend. You know, he believed in who Anakin was, and he did love him, and now he's lost that. So it's just this tragic end of, you know, a brotherly relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... To your point of the fact that this is an Anakin Obi-Wan scene, yeah, I would agree. I don't think Anakin fully becomes Darth Vader until Padme is dead.
Mm,
sure. You know, and that happens simultaneously with him being put into the mask and everything. But the death of Padme also has a huge impact on the quote unquote death of Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
As well, because that's what he was doing all this for. That's who he was doing all this for. And now that she's gone, why is he doing this? You know, what does he have to actually live for? He now just exists as Darth Vader.
Yep.
And you know, that coupled with this scene between Anakin and Obi-Wan on the banks of Mustafar, the last time they meet before their encounter on the Death Star is, you know, it's a heartbreaking scene.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason it's my number one, because it's not a scene that I like because of, I like the scene itself. You know, I like the scene because of, you know, its place in the story and the way that it's portrayed by these two actors and these characters and stuff. It's so well together with the story itself. And you're right. I challenge anybody not to feel something when watching this scene. You know, I almost didn't want to discuss this scene afterwards. Cause you know, after you played it, it's almost like, well, what else can we add to it? It's like, but you're right. It's number one on my list because of how effectively serves the story of these two characters. And I can't really say much more than that. So,
yeah. I mean, I think we both have always loved the scene, and it's the scene that defines those characters for our story. So yeah, it's huge and I love it.
Yeah.
So I love moments in Star Wars that make me feel like that really, really, really make me feel every time I watch those scenes. There are very few scenes of those, I think, but this is one of those scenes that just makes you feel underneath it all. Almost just even out of context, just watching that very quickly right now in the midst of this show, like I feel something.
Yeah.
You know, and that says a lot about a scene like that. And the death of Han Solo in Force Awakens does it to me as well. You know, there are some of these scenes in Star Wars that just like hit you deep in your soul, and that's great movie making.
Yeah.
Jason, anything else you want to add about the tragedy of Anakin and Obi-Wan?
No, I think we've said what needs to be said.
I think so too. I mean, I think that's going to wrap this up, Jason, for these Anakin Obi-Wan moments.
Good. I don't know how much more I can take of it.
So thus completes our galactic tour of the Star Wars universe through the eyes
via
of Anakin.
Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Yep, exactly. We hope you enjoyed the ride. This has been Star Tours 2.0.
Yeah, exactly. Or 3.0.
Exactly. Yeah, they've already updated it.
Mm-hmm.
Jason, before we wrap things up completely here, we've got some pretty big news.
Yes.
So we have officially launched our Patreon page, which is really exciting. And again, this is just something that has come about after doing this for so long. And realizing we kind of wanted to take the show to the next level. So we finally activated a Patreon account to encourage you, our listeners, to get even more involved by supporting the show, you know, in a fiscal way, if you will. Yes. And again, in case you don't know what Patreon is, just again, a brief explanation. Patreon is essentially a monthly subscription service. It's somewhat similar to Kickstarter, where essentially anybody can pledge some money to a campaign, and it'll be, like I said, it's a monthly subscription fee, and you can pull out at any time. Like, even if you pledge for 1 month and then the following month you're like, I don't really have the money for this anymore, you can pull yourself right out. It's real easy. And essentially the reason we decided to do it was we really wanted to up kind of the audio quality of the show, which is going to require some new equipment. All that equipment is pretty expensive. We have pretty good stuff, but like, we'd like better stuff, and the better stuff is even more expensive. So being that Jason and I both don't make a lot for a living and we have a lot of expenses outside of this, we really wanted to ask for your support with this. And also, you know, the point as well is a lot of Star Wars shows out there do a great job of doing like contests and giveaways. And they're usually able to do that because they have sponsors of some kind. Who essentially like send them stuff. Like Rebel Force Radio is great with this. You know, they've got Little Debbie's, you know, as their one of their main sponsors. So they can always like send out those gift packs. Galactic snack packs, but it's, you know, it's not costing Jimmy or Jason anything.
No.
So, you know, that's something we'd love to be able to do, is do some, you know, not like every week or every episode, but you know, a couple times a year, or, you know, once a quarter, be able to do like a fun contest on the show where we give you guys a cool prize. And in order to fund something like that, we would need your support. So again, we're not just asking this for us, because we're also giving back as well. I'm always having ideas of what I want to do on the show. And if you've listened to the show for all 5 years or even half that, you've probably seen the little segments that Jason and I have done either together or even individually that like we did a couple times and kind of sputtered out. I think that's, again, the fun of doing this podcast, is we're both very creative people. I'm constantly having these ideas of things I'd love to do on the show. And that's kind of how we're funneling those into some of our rewards through Patreon. So again, you know, there is a very simple $1 tier, which essentially just says you support the show, and you want to be known for that. There will be some special segments included with the $1 pledge later on, but more to come on that in the future. The $5 pledge is going to get you access to our Rebels episode reviews, which we're going to start doing.
And if we run out of that, we got six seasons of Clone Wars.
Exactly. Exactly. And then the, I believe there's, is it 5, 15, 25?
Yes, 100? It's 5, 15.
Yeah, 15 is going to get you access, obviously, to the Rebels episodes reviews, as well as we'll be doing one extra episode a month just for the patrons in that particular tier, where we essentially record on, you know, something about the mythology of Star Wars or the thematic elements of Star Wars or character stuff. It's not to say that we're not going to do that on the main show anymore, because of course we will. But probably what we'll do as well for the patrons in that particular tier is we'll ask you, what would you like us to talk about? And then we'll do it.
Exactly.
And then the next tier, which is $25, is also in the $15 is, I'm going to start, for folks in that, I've now delivered this twice as my Star Wars and Spirituality seminar talk. And it's gone very well every time I've done it. And I can break those up into little mini episodes. So I'd like to offer that to anybody who's going to do the $15 campaign as well. So you'll get the bonus episode with us, and then you'll also get these bonus Star Wars and Spirituality episodes. Again, if you're not somebody who cares about that stuff, you're already not listening. But if that is something you like, and that's obviously something I love to bring to the show, is my own sense of spirituality, this would be a great segment for you. The $25 piece is, you basically get to pick a show topic and be the guest host with us on the main show. And, you know, that's, and also obviously all the previous rewards. And then we're going bigger, going home with the $100 one. And again, this is not something we'd expect anybody to pledge every month. This would probably be something you might pledge once and that's it.
Yeah.
And we recognize,
and we've only got two slots.
Yes. Yeah. And
only
kind of
two. There are only two there are no less.
So and what you're going to get with that package again is obviously all the previous stuff, but you're also going to get a free shirt, Wampa's Lair t-shirt, as well as Joe Hogan will do an officially licensed Wampa's Lair print of you with us in the lair. So whoever is in this, he will do a print of you with Jason and I, like a profile picture. Mm-hmm. And we will mail you that print as well as use it as our profile picture for the month. So again, if that's something you're really interested in, Certainly.
And you have the ability to do that.
Exactly.
Great.
Yes.
You know, if you want to support us that much, we greatly appreciate it, but we're not expecting it. So, because, you know, Carl and I, we can't do that sort of thing with other Patreon things that we would want to support. So it's like, we understand, we get it if you can't do something that much. And if you can only do the dollar a month or whatever, great. Or if you can't do it, that's fine. And you just want to support the show, continue to, you know, weigh in on our matchups and our polls. We greatly, you know, appreciate that as well. Send in your questions. You know, we love interacting with you guys. So that's reward in and of itself. But if you want to help us financially, this is a great way to do that in order to make the show better and get you guys a little bit of extra stuff on the side as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So again, I'll say in advance, we appreciate anybody that supports this. And even those of you who want to but can't, we still appreciate you and your involvement on the show. Again, the reason we've started this is because we want to put more into the show, which literally is going to cost some actual expenses as well as time expenses. You know, some of these new segments that, you know, it's tough juggling full-time jobs plus the show. So in order to do extra ones, we're happy to do it. And there's that further incentive of, you know, your commitment to us will make us more, I don't want to say make us more committed to you. It's not that we're not. I don't want to sound like a jerk, but it'll keep us honest. You know, it also kind of, it funds those creative outlets as well. It'll definitely make us budget the time to make sure we get things like that out there. So again, you've got plenty of options there. If you can support us, great. If you can't right now, but you're like, you know what, I will next month. That's awesome too. And like I said, at any point you sign up, you know, and you decide like, oh, I don't want to keep doing this, whether it's in the dollar package or the $15 package, you know, I don't want to give $15 every month, just do it for a month. You can always withdraw the account or even, you know, do a smaller tier, whatever works for you. And like Jason said, we certainly understand neither one of us are rich. We can't be funding all these campaigns of our friends that have things going. But, you know, if you're interested in those things we're offering, you're interested in like a higher quality sounding show as well as some giveaway contests in the future, we need your support.
Yeah. So, and of course, to find that, you got to go to patreon.com/Wampa's Lair podcast.
Yeah. So the page is there. You'll see my beautiful mug in a little video.
Yep.
I had a lot of fun building that page. And I have to say it on the air, but I've got to thank Riley Blanton, who's the host of the Star Wars Report, and he's kind of keeps everything floating with the Second Airborne Division of podcasts. Riley was so immensely helpful with me as I was putting this together. I mean, we probably had two or three hour long Skype sessions together where Riley helped walk me through things and let me bounce ideas off of him. So I want to publicly say thank you to Riley Blanton. And if you don't listen to the Star Wars Report, you are doing yourself a disservice. Riley is, to me, one of the most engaging and excellent podcast hosts out there. I love when I'm on there as a guest. He asks great questions, and I love answering them. He asks hard questions, too, which sometimes catch me off guard, but I love them. Right.
And he gives you no warning.
Right, exactly. So anyway, a huge thank you to Riley for doing that for us.
Yeah, indeed.
But wow, this one went a little long, Jason.
It did.
I like it.
All right. Well, I suppose we should start wrapping up this episode. But before we go.
Yes, indeed.
We've got a matchup that's going to lead into our next episode.
That's right.
Because synergy or something.
So
whatever those buzzwords are.
Yeah.
Synergy. So, anyway, sorry, go ahead.
So yeah, like I think I posted something a while back, but I was able to read the Ahsoka novel about a month early thanks to my friend Greg, who got an advanced copy. And I loved the novel. I've been wanting to talk about it. Jason, you just finished it just the other day.
Yep.
Also loved it. Am I right?
It's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
I'm going to save the rest of my thoughts for the show next week.
So there you go. So next week we are going to do a show on the new Ahsoka novel by E.K. Johnson. Or is it Johnston?
Johnston, I think.
Johnston. Okay. And, If you have not read the novel, but you've been meaning to and you have it sitting on your shelf, maybe now is a great time to pick it up. And I'll tell you right now, it's an easy read. I mean, it yes. reads fast. You know, so we will be talking about that next episode. So that's also kind of a warning. If you haven't read it and you intend to read it and you don't have it read by next week, you may not want to listen in on the next episode.
Yeah.
Because we plan on talking about anything and everything. So.
Exactly.
And maybe exactly. you just have no intention of reading it. So that's also cool, too, because we'll tell you what it's about.
Exactly.
So that's coming up on the next episode. And be that as it may. We figured it'd be fun to do a matchup with that featured character herself, Ahsoka. And Jason, what is our matchup?
Yeah, so we are going to do a fun little matchup. Pit Ahsoka versus Rey.
Ooh.
Yes. I think this is going to be fun. I'm really curious to see what people think. Because there's a lot of... a lot of unknown factors with both of these characters that, you know, intangible factors with both these characters that could sway it one way or the other. So I'm really curious to see what people think about that matchup.
Yeah. So,
and Carl, where can they weigh in on that matchup or find links to our Patreon page or whatever?
There's a lot of information.
There's a lot of information that we're going to give you here. Yeah. So take a deep breath, get a pencil, and Carl, go for it.
Well, of course, there's our Facebook page, facebook.com/WampusLairPodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WampusLair. You can always email us, WampusLairPodcast@gmail.com. And now we have a Patreon page, which is, like we said, patreon.com/WampusLairPodcast.
Right. And I believe that will wrap up this episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This has been episode number 204. They were brothers. Kind of like Carl and I.
Hey.
For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.